Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Hope you are all well. Hopefully you had a beautiful weekend. I know it's hard to tell if you've had one or not, but it's Monday, in case you've lost track. It's Monday. It is the 27th of April, and it's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. With those details in our mind, we go to begin the program. I want to introduce our wonderful panel to you, and then also a reminder that you can join us. We always allow you and want you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me begin, and let's join the group. I have to press two buttons that I always forget, but there we go. Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Well, you know, we're just fine here, hunkered down in the lovely village of Menands. Watching rain, snow, whatever comes our way.
You're ready for anything, aren't you? Bunkered down and ready. Well, good morning to you. We are also thrilled to have Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler, is in the house. Hello, Jim. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. It's great to be back. Although I got to tell you, I think Libby is an optimist because I'm sitting here looking at war, disease, famine, and death. So we got the poor horsemen riding out there.
I think you need a different window.
Yeah, Jim. I'm a half. The glass is half full kind of girl. So, you know.
I assume you're at the office, Jim.
I'm working from home.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, it's good to have you here. And C.G. Dodds is with us, assistant professor at Albany Law School. Good morning, C.G. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Lots of coffee.
Great. Great. Caffeine it up and be ready for the next hour and a half or so. We are thrilled that you are with us as always. And WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you at this moment?
I'm fine, Joe. I'm glad you kept me to last because I have some news. We try to always keep everybody informed as to where we are and what's happening. The biggest thing for us is to keep the station on the air. We know that. And in order to do that, we've got to make these goals. We've been making $1 million, pardon me, in every fund drive. And in this fund drive, we're doing okay. I mean, you know, in the lockbox now is $184,000. We're going to start our lockbox campaign, obviously, next Monday. Nevertheless, last time, the last drive, the one that we had that came before this one, because everybody was giving their extra money and, you know, there was all kinds of good news, we had $346,000. Now, this time, we have $184,000. We have 500,000 people listening to WAMC. So we know that if everybody puts something in, we'll make it. You know, I'm thinking back, Joe, if I can just take a second to tell you all that we... That when we had a chance to buy the tower, which we desperately wanted to do, and there were those who told us, well, why don't you get a loan and you can buy it that way and pay it off on time? And I said, hell no. We're going to go to the people of WAMC and say we have a chance to buy this tower. And everybody I talked to said, well, we got to do it. We got to do it. And in one day, we made $2 million instead of $1 million. I say that because, folks, now we are really up against it. As I say, we've got $184,000 in the lockbox. Last drive, because the people were paying, they had some extra money they wanted to give and the rest of it, we had $346,000. The reason I told you the story about the tower is everybody's got to put something in. But there are a lot of reasons we got problems, one of which is that we don't have people to answer the phones. They're staying at home. We get that. We send our people home. So the only real way to do it right now, there are two ways. One, go to WAMC.org. Again, WAMC.org and say, Alan, here's mine. Whether it's $5 or $1,000, fine. That'll be great. Or you can put it in an envelope and send it to 318 Central Avenue, What is the zip, Joe? 318 Central Avenue,
Albany, New York, 12206.
Right. Yep. Okay. 12206. And we'll get it that way. But if you hear the urgency in my voice, you know that I'm not fooling around. We've got to hear from everybody now. If you've never done something, do something now. If you're waiting for an apology for me for something that I said was too left-wing or too middle-wing or too right-wing, I apologize. But whatever but whatever it is, get on the horn, get a way to do this. We can't take the phone calls, but we sure can go to WAMC.org or stick it in a good old-fashioned envelope and send it to 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Ladies, gentlemen, children, it's your station. We're all in it together. I've been saying that for years. And now is the time we've really got to hear from everybody. WAMC.org. Please, please do it now. Joe?
So online, WAMC.org, or as Alan mentioned, to our postal address, which is 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. And what better way to support the Postal Service during this difficult time than to send us a letter? 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. There's a variation, by the way. If you look on our website, there's a variation of the address on our website. You can send it to that address, too. I just want you to know there's a P.O. box up there. That will come here, too. So if you're in the car and you're writing it down, you want to send it to us, if you just look online, it's right there, and you can send us the money. Great. And we'll get it. So it's WAMC.org. We'll be checking in here throughout and give you an idea of how we're doing. But as Alan mentioned, you know, the lockbox is always open, but we'll officially kick it off next week. But we just wanted to bring you up to date of where we are right now, and that we're, you know, we want to keep pace because we know where we have to be able to do it and to really not, we're not going to have all the things that we normally have of people in the room and in the building and do all the stuff that we normally do. So,
and Joe, one more thing, and that
yes.
is that I just want everybody to know we're not in panic mode, but we are in serious mode. There's a difference.
There is.
This is where we all live. We all made this radio station. And now if everybody puts something in, it would be great. WAMC.org or 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206.
All right. And away we go. It's WAMC.org. And Alan just gave the address. Again, you can find that online as well. If you want to send it to us via mail, that is fine as well. We thank you very much for everything you've done. We thank you for everything you'll do and will continue to do to keep the station alive. With that, let us move on and talk to what is happening in the world and a lot of news to discuss with our wonderful panel this morning. So we will get started. First, we begin. You know, I didn't even obviously there are the calls to reopen and how that's going and where we're going and what's going to, you know, what it's going to look like over the next couple of days and weeks and months and pray tell years. The one thing, of course, we've been talking a lot about is you know, what is too much and too soon. Of course, we've talked a lot about Georgia. Yesterday, some folks, Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House coronavirus response coordinator, said Americans should expect social distancing guidelines to continue for months, saying social distancing will be with us through the summer. She said this on Meet the Press on NBC. Meanwhile, in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo, while encouraging continued social distancing, said during his daily briefing on Sunday that it was unreasonable to expect people to stay inside all the time when summer arrives, especially in the most populous part of the state. We need summer activities in downstate New York, the governor said. You can't tell people in a dense urban environment all through the summer months, we don't have anything for you to do. Stay in your apartment with the three kids, that doesn't work. So there is a sanity question here that we also have to take into consideration. So the governor also mentioned yesterday that he has come up with a plan. There's still details to be released, of course, but the reopening of New York could begin as early as the 15th of May, which is when the pause that we're currently under would expire. That would under what the governor talked about yesterday would be manufacturing jobs that would open up first and then slowly see how it goes over 2 weeks. Manufacturing, construction first, and suggested professional sports could even resume without fans, which is key, no fans, and then go from there. So that's where we'll begin and see what you all make of that. Alan.
Well, obviously, you can't have no economy. That's what we have now. We have no economy. People are closed, they're shuttered, they're out. So it has to start. The governor is right. It should, in our case, start, in New York's case, upstate, because that's where there's less activity in terms of the virus. Nevertheless, we don't really have a good answer. And anybody who goes out there and says, okay, the governor has lifted it, now we can all go crowding into a bar or a restaurant, you know, they're sadly mistaken. I could put it in more vehement terms, but they're sadly mistaken. So obviously the country is going to have to start opening up. And I can tell you that I'm not particularly interested in going to a crowded place myself. So one of the reasons that the baseball thing will be so important is that baseball has television contracts that pay them a lot of money. So even if there are no stands, there'll be some support. That's important.
Jim Handler.
So, you know, I think it's going to take us a while to open slowly. We're going to have to take things very carefully and watch for rebound effects and things like that. Obviously, those of us at universities are grappling with this very heavily because, you know, you're pulling 10,000 students from all over the country together in one place, and we have to really work on how are we going to track contacts, how are we going to test, how are we going to do things. So, you know, we can see that this is going to be a long and complex fight and are really trying to figure out what to do. But clearly, you know, we have to learn to live with this over time.
CG Dodds.
You know, I agree with everyone. I think that there's a psychological toll that this entire thing has taken. And so while we'll have certain businesses reopening, I think that people are going to be very slow, or at least those of us who are more cautious than others, will be very slow to patronize those businesses. I am concerned about, and I understand the rates of infection in upstate New York is significantly lower, of course, but as far as social distancing practices, I've actually been alarmed at what I've been seeing, people not wearing masks, people going out in groups.
Right.
And so it concerns me that maybe it just hasn't gotten to us yet in the same way. And so I know, but then also I know the economy has to restart. We can't continue living like this. So I think it needs to be gradual. And I wholeheartedly agree that there has to be expanded testing.
Libby.
Well, you know, I mean, there's not a lot more that can be said. I think from the academic institution point of view, you know, I went to doing distance learning, I guess, you know, on Zoom. I held all my classes on Zoom. This Thursday is my last class, and it worked. But I have a friend who teaches down in New Jersey at a medical school, and she's talking about how do you do Zoom when you're students have to do some hands-on with patients, you know, and that's going to be a real challenge for the healthcare education industry. I think there's a great desire on the behalf of the medical community to reopen so that what people are now deeming elective surgeries can happen. You know, it's an interesting dynamic. I don't think any of us really recognize just how much what everyone now considers elective surgery, like joint replacements and things like that, fueled the healthcare industry. Because of the fact that insurance money is not flowing into doctors and hospitals, all these hospitals are really in very bad financial shape because of it. And you know, and so this is so complicated, and it touches so many aspects of our life. I mean, retail is trying to go more online, and you know, but that still, we are social beings. We, for the most part, we like being together. We like seeing one another. We like hugging one another, you know, and having dinner together. This is going to be an interesting and challenging time as we try to move this forward. I'm hopeful, because if I wasn't, I'd be really in bad shape. But, you know, I mean, you know, I can't just be down in the dumps the entire time. And so, you know, you have to remain hopeful that science and in a sense, capitalism will prevail. You know, when things get tough, the tough get going, and we see that the medical community and the science community is working hard to come up with treatment and vaccines, I just hope that profit doesn't trump public health.
The other thing, too, of course, is that we are looking at, even if you look at what the governor proposed yesterday, that this rollout, and rightfully so, I'm not saying it should be expedited, but this rollout, we have 2 weeks until the 15th, and then we would look at manufacturing and construction jobs in some parts of the state, and then another 2 weeks in other sectors of the business community will open, and then another 2 weeks in another sector. So it's going to be a slow rollout, which means that we are looking into what many people have thought for a long time, summer, fall, .. right?
Yeah, and it's going to be a rollout upstate versus downstate. You know, it's about who's got that flattening curve for 2 weeks. And, you know, I looked at the numbers. We can all go to Schuyler County. They only have 7 cases.
Bring on Schuyler County.
And obviously,
they have a great humane society, but they only have 7 cases.
We have 45 seconds. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, but obviously there'll be a lot of people, once the upstate economy opens, from downstate, who'll be heading upstate to take advantage of it.
Yep.
And that'll be both good and bad, depending on where you're sitting.
Absolutely. We'll break, we'll come back, and we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok is here. We have C.G. Dodds from the Albany Law School. Jim Hendler is here from RPI and political consultant Libby Post. We, of course, welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. And if you have a few minutes, you can even help out the lockbox right now, WAMC.org. WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Jim, was there anything I thought you were headed in when we just before we went to break about what we were talking about with Libby?
You know, I think there's just a lot of there's still a lot of uncertainty, and I think we have to be very careful. And, you know, I'm a data guy, as everyone who's heard me before knows. And the data on this one is awfully confusing because we're seeing different progressions, different things. And a lot of it is until we have the testing that can really give us the numbers, it's going to be really hard to know what to do with this. So I agree with Libby that, you know, it's going to be slowly rolling back and being careful. But at the same time, we really are people and need people.
And you know, we can't trust the data partially because we can't trust the federal government to get anything right at this point.
So with Dr. Birx talking about much more testing and social distancing needing to go into the summer and fall, I mean, that's a bit of an admission, isn't it, that we are not where we need to be when it comes to the testing that would be required to open up various segments of the economy.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely. You know, Joe, we're currently looking at, let's see, the last count I saw was we're closing in on 900,000 cases in the U.S., over 60,000 deaths. Just to put that in perspective, that's in 3 months. The average year flu deaths are about 30 to 35,000 for an entire year. So we're already seeing numbers that are very different. And there's now no states, no territories in the U.S. that are reporting no cases. Actually, that's not true. Guam, the Marshall Islands and Micronesia have no cases yet, but everywhere else in the U.S. and U.S. territories has them. So it's really, this is something that we've never quite seen this before. And I think, you know, everyone's making up as they go along. And I agree with Libby that, you know, the fact that the federal government can't quite get its act together is definitely not helping. We've reached the point where Trump is not even giving briefings because people are giving him pushback when he said dumb things. So, you know, we're even going to lose what little approach to leadership we were seeing.
On that case, and Alan, I'll be interested in your perspective on this, and then go around the room here. But the president did not conduct a Q&A with reporters over the weekend. He had a brief report, if you will, on a Saturday. This amid Republican concerns that his extended appearances at the White House and the daily Coronis briefings are hurting him politically. After suggesting last week that injections of disinfectants into the human body could help fight the virus, Mr. Trump took no questions at Friday's briefing and later said the events were no longer worth his time. He was tweeting yesterday. He tweeted, I believe, he didn't start tweeting until about noon yesterday, first wishing his wife a happy birthday. And then after that, I believe there were around 30 tweets that happened and all the usual suspects as far as enemies. But the Times analyzed every word, all 260,000 of them, that Mr. Trump has spoken about the virus from March 9th when the outbreak began, leading to the widespread disruptions through mid-April. And the most common theme, anybody?
Well,
me.
Self-congratulation. There you go.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Surprised? I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. And we also shouldn't be surprised that Dr. Birx is more concerned about the fact that the whole, you know, have a Clorox chaser to get rid of the disease is still in the news cycle.
But as far as the president not speaking and coming out on Saturday or Sunday and being very brief on Friday, my question is, Alan, how long do you think that'll last?
Well, let me put it this way. He's got a real problem, and that is the Republican United States senators. These are people who have been lapdogs. Let's face it, that's what they are. They haven't got the guts to, you know, take him on. But now they're losing. They're losing in the polls, or many of them are, and they face the problem of losing the United States Senate. And that has got them concerned, and therefore him concerned, because if they go, he's done. He's over. So I suspect that that's what this is all about. Now, the Times have been doing a great job, and with the vehemence of this guy's attacks on the Times, you have a feeling, they are really landing with him. When the press is in front of him, he attacks the press frontally. He just says, you're terrible. He talks to people. He says, you were in the room when they weren't in the room. You weren't in the room when they were in the room. And then he criticizes Joe Biden for being absent-minded. So, I think he's in real trouble. I do think, however, if he shuts up, hate to say this, he might be in better shape than he is now when he goes before the public every day and makes a jerk out of himself.
Well, you just wonder how long that's going to last. I mean, he's never, like, self-restraint hasn't been, one of his strong suits.
He doesn't know how to shut up. That's the issue.
Well, the problem will be this. If his numbers start to go up, when he doesn't show up, he'll stay away. That's my bet.
There was reporting over the weekend that one of the things that he seemed to take away from all of the negativity from even the Republicans and those in his own staff saying that he shouldn't be doing what he's doing is that it, instead of talking about the health effects and instead of focusing on the virus, start focusing on the economy and start focusing on jobs and give a report on that as opposed to the medical stuff, which maybe he has learned to keep, you know, doctors explain. Yes.
And Joe, no Birx. She's out. The doctors, the experts, they're out. And it's all going to be economics from now on. We'll see whether that serves him well. But you can just see Burke sitting there looking at him as he was trying to get her. He said later, sarcastic, but it was certainly not that. Trying to get her to say, yes, you're right. The sunlight and the detergent would work. She's looking like a deer caught in the headlights. She was done from that moment on that she wouldn't say, yes, you're right, Doc. You're right, Mr. President.
We'll see.
Jim?
By the way, a quick call out for anyone who hasn't seen the Saturday Night Live open by Brad Pitt doing Anthony Fauci. Go find it online.
It was brilliant.
But it also is moving.
It was great. So moving. When he took the makeup off, when he took the phony hair off and the rest of it, I almost wept. I thought it was just great.
I was in tears, yes.
We have some letters. We go to Ellen, who said, where is New York State getting the antibody test and who is the manufacturer? How and why has this particular test been chosen? Is the Wadsworth Center developing its own antibody test? And if so, how far along in the process are they? I do not know the answers to those questions. Does anyone on the panel know the answers to those questions?
So there's currently not one test that's being used. And also we're looking at different kinds of tests between the antibody tests, which tell you, did you have it? And the diagnostic tests, which say, do you have it? Which, remember, are two different things. Okay. Wadsworth has its own test they've developed, but there are many others coming in from different places and things. We were talking recently with Mount Sinai Hospital, which is working on getting stuff and been running. There are a lot of different ways to test for the antibodies. And again, we don't have yet one that's showing absolute superiority to the others. The antibody tests, though, are doing better than the diagnostic tests. So that's coming along well. So we think we're going to see pretty good growth in that. And, you know, I think we're lucky up here to have Wadsworth in the state and up here in upstate.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, to our next letter we go, and that is from Russ. Once a virus has 20% penetration, it's not going to be stopped. Reopening will have to be stutter-stepped as flare-ups are detected and cordoned off. Businesses opened and closed up again. It's just going to be the way things are for a year or two. Are we ready for that, I guess, is the question.
Clearly not. I mean, and there's no acceptable answer to this. If you open up, you're going to get a resurgence. If you don't open up, the economy is dying, and people have to have something. So, you know, this is no easy answer for anybody.
Meanwhile, Thomas says, in terms of opening things up gradually, are Albany and the Mid-Hudson Valley considered upstate or downstate?
Well, we're considered upstate, but our numbers are higher than, dare I say, Schuyler County or Yates County or any of those smaller counties with smaller populations.
And as far as definition is concerned, definition of upstate is very vague. I personally have always believed that Yonkers is where upstate begins.
Hey, I know some people who thought anything above West 14th Street was upstate. So
I was going to say, where I grew up, we called it the Bronx. Yeah.
Back to the Saul Steinberg New Yorker cover from decades ago. Okay. We go to Jim, who says, so the virus briefings are no longer worth Trump's time. Really, Mr. President? I think viewers and listeners have determined that your braggadocious daily nonsense is no longer worth their time. I'd rather watch the Rockford Files reruns, which are really, really good.
Or at least Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
Let me just say that there is a big problem here. We don't know what to do, and there is no good answer. Now Cuomo, who has a 76% approval rate, 76%, I believe it is, when I just saw it, is extraordinary. But I'm still getting letters saying he's a jerk. He's not letting me go back to work, which is ridiculous. But, you know, people are people and passion is passion. And quite often when I get one of those letters, I want to say, do something else. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. You know,
got
I
it.
Think.
Yes, CJ.
I was going to say, I think part of the issue is that Trump doesn't see the value in telling the truth, right? Telling lies has served him for his entire life. It's been very profitable. But this is
because,
a time in which...
Oh, because? What do you think? In other words, it's the base, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it's about? He doesn't care about the rest of us. He doesn't care about that letter writer, right? The letter writer says, can't stand the guy. I don't watch him. I watch Gunsmoke or whatever.
His base has a complete aversion. It's a level of cognitive dissonance that we keep trying to understand, but it's not possible to understand. People tell themselves and believe whatever they want to believe. But right now, that's not serving him well. And
exactly.
I would like to think that he would learn to just shut up. As my mom used to say, sometimes you just got to know when to be quiet. But he never misses an opportunity to make the wrong decision. And I believe that when he thinks he's in a safer position, he's just going to get right back on that stage because he's the type of, he's the definition of a narcissist. If we were just to look at narcissists, he would kill himself looking at his own reflection in the water.
But if his numbers go up with not the rest of us, but with the base, will he know enough to shut up? Because I think his numbers are going to go up. I think they're so embarrassed by the guy that they're saying, I can't support him if he shoots off his mouth every day.
I don't think he'll know when to shut up because he doesn't take advice. He doesn't take wise counsel. I think one thing that hasn't happened yet is that this virus has not reached rural areas, right? So you have, a large swath of his base that isn't directly impacted in the same way as on the coast.
Right.
And I think that may alter the equation some. I don't know how much. But no, I don't think he knows when to shut up. He doesn't
know. Yeah, but something made him shut up, right? This time.
Yeah, something did. And I think...
Well, he became a national joke for days, an international joke for...
So I think it was the legal liability.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah.
I think his lawyers got involved and said, look, you're sailing perilously close to the edge with this one. Because immediately when I saw that, I was thinking, if somebody ingests this stuff, their family is going to sue him for wrongful death. Now, we know he loves trying to get out of paying people and lawsuits, but he's got a lot of legal issues that could come out of this thing, and I think that's what made him shut up.
Well, I'd like to think you're right. I just don't.
I think it was the political
advisors
than the legal advisors. But.
I think when those senators got on him and said, we're going to lose, we're losing in all of these polls or many of these polls, we're going to lose the Senate, he got scared. I think that once he loses those Republicans, he's done. He has nothing protecting him.
The polling is showing. I mean, it's early, albeit that, but the polling is showing that he's running behind Biden in a number of swing states. And I think they're dead even in Florida, which must scare the bejesus out of him. DeSantis, the governor of Florida, just called the state God's waiting room for senior citizens. I mean, they have absolutely no respect for life, despite all of their protestations to the other. And
could you repeat that?
Fascinating. Just one more thing. I just find it fascinating that all of these anti-choice people, because that's who these people are, the Trumpers, are now using pro-choice rhetoric of being able to control their own bodies so that they can go back to work. It's like, give me a break.
Could you repeat what DeSantis said? Because I didn't catch that.
Oh, that Florida is God's waiting room for senior citizens.
For retirees, ground zero for nursing room residents.
Yeah. Nice, huh?
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a lot of letters. That will bring us to the top of the hour, and then we'll get on to other topics as well. We thank you all very much. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. You can also help out the lockbox at WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 52 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, Alan Chartok, C.G. Dodds, Jim Henler, and Libby Post. Going to the letters, Joanna says the federal government is completely failing in its duty to provide clinical-grade masks to all healthcare workers, service workers, and the general public. Well-meaning people, mostly women, are sewing face masks at home with no knowledge of the clinical standards for masks, type of material, thickness, tightness of weave, number of layers and shapes to create a mask that will fit properly and filter out the coronavirus. It is a lovely effort, but lacking in clinical validity. I blame the federal government for placing us all in danger. That from Joanna.
Hey, Joe.
Yes.
If I may, I'm sorry to interrupt. I really am. But we're getting a lot of mail now. I made what I considered to be a very impassioned plea to get us going on this thing to help us stay alive. And we're getting a ton of letters, a ton of donations. And I just wanted, if I could, Joe, if you'd permit me to read a couple of the comments. One came, we said, we love you and your dedicated staff, and we need you now more than ever. Another said, we listen every day, especially now. Love you. Thanks. And that's from Daniel and Stephen. And another said, I wish I could afford more. You'll get me through this difficult time. Thank you. And another said, I started listening to WAMC a few months ago when I moved from Massachusetts from Boston to Pittsfield. I never missed the roundtable. And I just heard Alan's request for a pledge, and I feel compelled to give. Love you guys. Keep up the good work. If everybody could just listen to those comments and do something. I just talked to Amber Sickles in our little break, and she said the money is really coming in now. So if everybody could do one thing, we'll be whole. We're way behind where we were in the last drive when people had a little extra money. They were giving it before the end of the year and their taxes. But now we are at risk, and I'm asking everybody to do something. So if you can just WAMC.org, it would be great. I'm sorry for interrupting, Joe. Really
no, we
sorry.
Do. Just a reminder, we need you to do it online. We don't have people in here
because right.
Everyone's at home. So we yeah. can take your phone calls, but we can certainly take it online, WAMC.org. You can also mail it to us. The website has our address, but I'll give it to you now, too. It's 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. And again, that address is on the website as well. You can find us easily.
Thanks, Joe.
All right.
Now, Alan.
Go yes. ahead, Jim.
Alan, I work for some major organizations down in both D.C. and New York, which work with big publicity firms. And when they heard that I give pieces on WAMC, they said that has one of the reputations as one of the best regional NPRs in the country. Kudos to you for that. And again, if listeners don't understand just what a gem they have in this area, you know, they're missing something.
Jim, I love you for that. Of course, I've loved you anyway, right away in the right way. But, you know, it is so important to all of us that we keep this thing alive. I took it over in 1979. And here we are today, and this is the worst catastrophe we have ever faced. There's no question, and everybody knows it. So if everybody just does something, one little thing, there are 500,000 listeners a month. If everybody puts something in right now and doesn't say, let the other guy do it, we'll be home. But I need everybody. We need everybody. We is the most important thing. We're all in this together. And thank you for that, Jim. That was great.
All right. We just have a few minutes before the top of the hour, so we'll get in a couple of letters here. Patricia writes, Trump is a master at marketing and spin, and unfortunately, Trump's COVID response is highlighting the only tool in his toolkit. If only Trump had another way to lead available to his thought process. My fear is his base will only follow the spin and not think for themselves. We go to Tracy, who says abiding by social distancing rules as long as needed is like the social contract of driving. We all do it by the rules because it's in everyone's best interest. Matthew says the governor defined upstate as anything north of Westchester and Rockland counties. Downstate is defined as New York City, Westchester, Rockland, Nassau, and Suffolk counties. That to a previous letter writer. Tom says, just a comment. I'd like to differentiate between the federal government and Trump's federal government. Fair enough. Mitchell says, dear panel, if Trump does another press conference, a reporter should ask him, don't you think you're better off keeping your mouth shut? This might goad him into more embarrassing statements that will help us to get rid of him. Mark writes, employee and customer safety. I haven't seen any specific federal or even state guidelines or procedures, only vague goals on what businesses are supposed to do to keep their employees and customers safe. On the federal level, isn't OSHA supposed to set standards and procedures? Is anyone on the state or federal level going to hold businesses responsible for keeping their employees and customers safe? And how? Are customers or employees going to be able to sue businesses if they become sick? I heard the legislation may have to be passed or an executive order issued to exclude companies from liability for their employees and customer safety. Is this true? CG, you want to swipe at that one?
I don't know the specifics of that, but I do know that it would be very difficult to legislate whether or not a party can sue their employer. There are just so many different legal consequences for that. And I can see even if there was a law passed to that extent, we'd end up in the Supreme Court over that issue because you can't legislate your way out of gross negligence, for instance. So if we were to think about Tyson's and their food centers, what if there was a law saying that their employees could not sue them? There are all sorts of just ramifications for this to where I could see a law potentially trying to make it through. And if it did, maybe it would be successful considering the fact that a lot of our government is bought by lobbying. Like, let's just be honest about that.
Right.
But it would end up right back in the courts, because it's, and I think it, well, I'm not going to go as far as saying unconstitutional, but I don't see how the constitutionality of that could be held up.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. We'll give you an update on the lockbox and also give you a few minutes to help us out and do what you can do. WAMC.org, the website, will bring you to where you need to. I'll just say pledge now and you can go right there. It's WAMC.org. We will be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Got a letter from Beverly who says, can you say the name of your panelist from Albany Law? Could you spell her last name? She's a welcome addition. Love the show. Well, her name is CG Dodds. It's D-O-D-D-S. And we love her, too. So there you go.
You got it right. Nobody ever gets it right.
Jim Hendler is here as well, Libby Post, and Alan Shartok, and we thank you all for being so nice. We also are talking about our lockbox this morning, and it's been a good morning so far. Over $192,000 we have in the lockbox right now. And we got this from Sue, who said, I love you guys. You are all the best. I'm from Brooklyn and live stream the roundtable every morning that I'm not working, which is actually every morning now. I also listen to WNYC. And for real, you guys rock above WNYC. As the other listener said, you were a gift to upstate folks. And when up with my girlfriend in Schenectady, it is the highlight of our morning. Thank you for what you provide. Honest, intelligent broadcasting. And that from Sue in Brooklyn. And we thank you very much for that, Sue. Alan, remind them how they can help out.
Well, you know, I may be a little too emotional these days because I'm so close to, you know, staying home and doing everything that we possibly can to for everybody to stay safe. And but I have to tell you, when I hear a letter like that, I get a little wet around the eyes because this thing is and always has been all our baby. We all have made it what it is today. And it is so important to keep it going. I mean, we made $5,000 in just a few minutes this morning. That was great. But we could do the whole thing right now if everybody would just go and go to WAMC.org and say, I'm with you, Alan, Joe, group, I'm with you. I'll make it happen. I'm going to give you something, whether it's $5 or $1,000. But we can do it. But we have to do it together. And I know we can. WAMC.org or 318 Central Avenue. That's 318-318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. I'm counting on everybody to be there because we're all in this together.
WAMC.org, and you can find the address there as well, and you can also make a pledge when you go online. We have a lot of letters. We'll go to those, and we'll keep you updated as we continue this morning on how the lockbox is going. Robert says, yesterday I was speaking with my brother from downstate who refers to COVID as the Chinese Wuhan flu, and he mentioned that college students are suing for the return of tuition since they paid for in-person learning and not distance learning. Have you heard anything about this?
Well, we have. Jim, did you want to talk to this, or do you want me to say something? It's up to you.
Why don't you pick it up?
Well, we do. I do know we've been featuring interviews with college presidents and others who are indicating that, this letter is correct, that people are going to have to be paid back if the universities aren't coming through. And that's part of the huge problem that universities are facing right now.
And CG, as far as actually the students suing the colleges, how do you see that going?
Well, I see that they have a viable claim because they paid for residential in-person classes. And as someone who is now teaching online, it's not what they paid for. And we're doing our best. I know at least at Albany Law School, you know, we've all rallied and we're doing our best to deliver the best content and to still uphold the academic integrity of our institution for our students. But I can see why students feel aggrieved in these circumstances. That being said, these are unforeseen circumstances. So there's an element of force majeure in this that I think may be difficult to prove in court. But I do. I feel for the students because this is not what they signed up for.
Right.
Yeah, but none of us signed up for the pandemic either.
Right.
You know,
go ahead.
No, it's just like, I get it that they feel aggrieved, but nobody signed up for the pandemic. I think everybody who's teaching is trying to do the best they can with a really bad situation. And sometimes people just have to accept that this is where we are at this particular moment in time. And this was not, I mean, it's not like all the institutions got together and said, ooh, let's all switch to distance learning all together online and then we don't have to pay people as much money and blah, blah, blah. I think all the colleges and universities would love to go back to normal. But this is what we have right now.
Well, and I think it's worth understanding that, I mean, the universities are literally fighting for our existence. If you think about how many people are employed in just the Albany, just the capital region among our four or five universities. You know, we have the CARES Act seems like it gave a lot of money, but if you look at where the money went, we didn't get, you know, many of the schools in this area didn't get nearly as much as some others. When you look at what enrollments in this area have been challenging just demographically, now you add this, I mean, we really are going to be a very different region if we don't have these universities, if we don't have these jobs. So, you know, I hope the students understand that we all would love to be in a different place, but that we're really working as hard as we can to do everything we can to get back to normal as soon as possible.
And I will say, I think the lawsuits would be very nearsighted, right? Because you may think that I'm going to get back my tuition, but the ultimate impact of a large scale lawsuits against institutions could be that you destroy entire schools. And at that point, particularly in this region where there is the opportunity to obtain high quality, affordable education, that's an unforeseen consequence of all of these different lawsuits. So I think that students have to recognize that, as Libby said, none of us signed up for this. And so there are hits that all of us are going to take, and maybe lawsuits. Well, I don't think that lawsuits will be the correct route for this.
Speaking of lawsuits, Amy has a question about the courts. Can someone on the panel give me information on what the New York courts are doing? What is happening to people in the middle of court proceedings that have to meet deadlines with paperwork regarding the Division of Human Rights or other state agencies? CG, is everything pretty much on hold at the moment?
Well, there are some hearings being held. A lot of video conference hearings are being held. Other items are on hold. It's not clear, as far as what I know, exactly whether it's on a case-by-case basis or there's a generalized hold on certain types of proceedings.
All right, Amy, I hope that helps. We go to Alex, who says, hey guys, I'm an ICU nurse at Albany Med. Just wanted to make sure that the public knew about Albany Med's daily videos regarding the status of COVID in the capital region. And you can find those on YouTube. You just look for Albany Med COVID and it'll come up. That said, the general consensus on our unit is that it's too early to open. We're doing well right now as far as being able to manage, despite high stress and concern for depleting personal protective equipment. We are worried that if a quarantine begins to lift in our region, then the rate of infection will become unmanageable. That from Alex. Doug says, first, yes, of course, Jim.
Can I just throw in one thing real quick? We've been working with AMC. They heard actually the story on your radio station from one of our computer scientists and contacted us. They've been sharing data. We've been improving the models. They are wonderful. It's great to have them in this region. And, they're really working hard to get on top of this thing. But their willingness to share, their willingness to really work hard to make sure we all know what's going on has been great.
Give a sense of how that helps overall. Like what we'll get out of this research.
There's so much about this particular virus we don't know in terms of how to care for it, who's most at risk. There's a certain element of literally making it up as we go along. And the more I work with doctors on this, on the data side of this, the more I admire the fact that, essentially they're experimenting as we go along. This disease is unlike just about anything we've seen before in terms of some of the ways it applies. We have models that show it peaking soon. We have models that show it peaking in June. And, part of this is testing, but a lot of it is that this thing is just a very weird virus, and the cooperation of the medical community to help the scientists. So sometimes there's a disconnect between the scientists and the medical community in terms of one is really worried about healthcare, the other one is really worried about creating drugs and doing the biological work at the bottom of this. But on this epidemic, it's amazing to see just how much people are pulling together and sharing and trying to figure out what, not only what's going on, but what we do about it.
You're so right about what we don't know. I think I heard Andrew Cuomo, I don't want to misquote him, but I think I heard him saying that 80% of the people on ventilators don't make it. So, yeah. This is incredible. Need to get all these ventilators, and I know people who are telling me, look, if I get this disease, don't put me on a ventilator. I just want the oxygen. Don't put me on a ventilator. So we're learning, as you say, Jim. We are learning as we go. What do we know? We don't. Until the big fight was to keep everybody alive by getting them a ventilator. Now it turns out that they may not be that helpful. That's new information.
Or what terms of ventilation, what drug repurposing can be done? There's been some very promising stuff that's unlike the president's things that are really working. But mostly they're working on people who are in the advanced respiratory syndrome. So we are getting better at curing. They are getting better at curing people who have the most severe symptoms and are in the worst shape, but long way to go.
Let's go to Norm's letter. This is in regards to West Point. Trump supporters need to reflect on the use of West Point cadets at their upcoming graduation as Trump rally pawns. Flying them back to campus from all over the country to stand side by side so that Trump can play general and ramble foolishness. It is a dangerous non-leadership thing to do.
Great letter.
Doug says, forced to stay home and care for my two sons. My wife is a nurse and cannot. I've called the Department of Labor, attempted to access their website for weeks with no success. I finally got a call back today, and I am more confused than I was previously. The person calling had no answers for me and read off a script. And, oh, yeah, what about the bailout money? We go to Kate, who says, question, who do we pay back? Last week, a listener asked, who are we borrowing from for the stabilization trillions? Is the money essentially printed in the basement? Who are we borrowing from? Ourselves, the Chinese, our U.S. banks? In other words, who are we paying back and at what rate of interest? Could you please discuss this so we understand how this is supposed to work? I'd appreciate that.
Our great-great-grandchildren are going to pay for this.
That's right.
If we have any.
Or put it another way, all of the above. I mean, you know, that's what's happening right now. Sure, the Chinese own some of our paper or bonds. You buy a bond, you get interest on it. So when you take the entire amount of money that is at the bottom line that we owe, there's vigorous attached. And you are so right, Libby, our great-great-grandchildren will be paying for it, unless, of course, we decide that we don't want debt. And when you say you don't want debt, there are people involved in politics, like the banks and others, who may not be on the same side as everybody else.
There's this little thing called, that everybody thinks is so horrible, called raising taxes. You know, when the tax code has been gutted the way it is, letting the uber rich not off the hook of paying taxes, the rest of us end up holding the bag. And I'm sorry, but, you know, they need to pay their fair share. And we may very well have to raise taxes because of all of this.
Not under this president.
No, I know not under this president, but under the next one, if we're going to be responsible at all.
That's right.
Gene writes to us and says, to students wanting to sue for their tuition, I have to ask, who the hell isn't feeling aggrieved? My husband died and I can't even have a memorial service. My grandbabies are growing up and I can't even hug them. Who do I sue? And I've taken audio online courses. They can be wonderful. For heaven's sakes, work at your education yourself. So that from Gene. Paul writes, my fear is that the Democrats are so focused on Trump's failures that they are not focused on their own failures. The best Democrats can offer is Joe Biden. That is not a question. That is a statement as it is written here in front of me.
You know what, Joe?
Yep.
There are choices to be made. I mean,
you
have by far the worst president a narcissistic, megalomaniacal, factually incorrect, lying president, and you have Joe Biden. Now, please, what is that letter all about? I mean, to me, the name of the game is getting rid of the one we got. Joe Biden is a decent fellow. He may not be perfect, but you know what? This is a crazy kind of a situation. Get rid of this plague.
We need leadership and we need government, and it's not coming from the Republicans at this point. So look at your alternatives.
Right. I mean, you know, we have when Cuomo called Mitch McConnell out on the carpet the other day about not giving states and local governments money and daring them to allow states to go bankrupt and wanting our money back. I mean, that's leadership. Yes, you know, some people could say he was grandstanding, but the fact of the matter, he was actually standing up for his state. And we do not have leadership now. And, you know, people can cry in their coffee all they want, but if they don't come out and vote this monster out of office, we are in for four more years of death, destruction, and the end of our democracy. I really feel that way.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, Libby, your point about death goes to Trump saying, what do you have to lose?
Right.
And
right.
Now we're at a point to where it's your life. And
that's right.
You know, this is not, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, right, where liberals are just mad as heck that he's in office and we're just trying to nitpick at every little thing. He is killing people and he's responsible for the loss of life, which I think is a human rights violation level at this point due to all of the lies and misinformation. And so this is a life or death situation. And I think that people need to take it seriously because we are seeing the consequences of not just a crisis in leadership, but putting a demagogue in office and giving him free range.
Absolutely. I think every death in this country because of coronavirus lands at his feet.
So, meanwhile, in other bad news, a pandemic of corruption, $40 masks, questionable contracts, rice-stealing bureaucrats mar the coronavirus response. There's an article in the Washington Post today talking about how corruption is really on the uptick as a result to what we are doing. They write, quote, countries large and small are shelling out trillions of dollars to combat both the coronavirus outbreak and its brutal economic fallout in what analysts are calling the largest financial response ever to a single global crisis. As governments race to source everything from food aid to face masks, they are prioritizing speed over transparency, dropping competitive bidding and other safeguards to keep pace with the pandemic. Most have no choice, given the speed of the still unfolding crisis. It's either buy quickly or put millions at risk. But concern is rising about the percentage of the taxpayer dollars and euros and yen and pesos and more lining the pockets of corporate and corrupt, lining the pockets of corrupt bureaucrats, crony contractors, and crime syndicates. There is a anti-corruption watchdog, Transparency International, saying these are cases that are happening now in real time, looking at the gaps in the systems and the amount of money that is correctly being thrown at the problem. It's fair to say that we are very concerned. So what do we do about that? That's what I thought. None of you have a good answer.
Nobody has a good answer. Of course it's true. People are corrupt, you know. It's astounding to me that people will steal. They will do things that are so. I mean, I believe Trump is a perfect example of this. That is so antithetical to their children and their grandchildren. Well, their children is a different story, but their grandchildren and their children and what they are doing to this country is so crazy. I mean, it's just nuts. And they go ahead and they do it, and the corruption means nothing to them, and it doesn't trouble them a bit. Unbelievable.
Libby?
Well, and I think he's making millions out of all this. I've been reading that he's trying to get some of the, you know, the CARES money for his hotels and all this sort of stuff. The hydroxychloroquine, he has money in Novartis. I mean, you know, corruption. When the president of the United States, which is the biggest, richest country in the world, is corrupt, it sends a signal that it's okay for everybody else to do it. And we've seen it here. We've seen, you know, face masks online going for $30 a pop, where it used to be, you know, $30 for 100. You know, things like that. People are taking advantage of that, and it just shows how callous some people are. And that they're really only concerned with their own bottom line, not with public health, not with the welfare. I mean, there was somebody at the Great Honkin that happened at the Capitol the other day with at the back of their car said something like, I don't care if you die. I want my business to open. You know, it's like, give me a break.
Give me a break, indeed.
Can I usually not the ray of sunshine on this show, but... I do want to give a shout out. We only have about 30 seconds,
but go ahead.
A fast shout out. There's been also a lot of compassion shown. I think people who are understanding just how important the healthcare workers, the people who groceries, the people who deliver the mail, et cetera, et cetera. We suddenly understand how much we need all these people in the world. And I think the small number of crazies can't let us get down.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll do our last round together. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back. We've been talking about a lot of serious topics this morning on the panel, and we've also been talking about just our future, WAMC's future, and telling you about where we are in the lockbox and where we are in our fundraising. I think we started out this morning saying that the lockbox had $182,000 in it. As of right now, we have $197,154. Just for those of you who may be keeping score at home, that's $2,896 away from $200,000 in the lockbox, which would be a lovely place to be in about 15 minutes from now. So if we can put the pressure on, one thing, just a reminder, if you're just joining us, we can't take your phone calls because everybody's home. And there are a few of us in the building, but not enough. We're all, I'm on the air, Mike's busy, you know. So, but otherwise, we can certainly take your pledge at WAMC.org, WAMC.org. But Alan, a pretty amazing morning.
It has been. You know what? We have the best audience in the whole world. We know it. When we asked for the tower and we said we finally have a chance after all of these years to own our own tower, but it's going to cost $1 million. Guess what? How long it took? A day. It took a day. It was astounding. People have been writing us all morning saying they love us. They love you, Joe. They love me, which is strange to believe. They love the whole staff and what they get. They've been comparing us to where they came from and what we do, and it makes you cry. I'll be honest with you, because you know we're all human beings, and when we do something that we think is good, and that you think is good, we're very, very pleased and very grateful. It's it's WAMC.org. It's amazing. We ask people give because they know how important keeping this radio station going is. We ask people give. WAMC.org. That's all it takes. Or, you know, put it in an envelope and send it to 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Again, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. It's amazing. Joe, you're doing a great job. Let's just keep on talking about this because we're way, way behind where we were in the last drive. If everybody can do something, it isn't ever and it never has been a matter of just let's do it now because it'll be good for our taxes. No, this is something much greater than that. This is about this continuing what we're doing. If you can do it now, WAMC.org. I'm counting on everybody to do it.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And you can also just put a check in an envelope and mail it to us, too. Again, we want to support our postal service in this time of need as well. 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. We'll go to some letters. We have just under 10 minutes left here, and we go to Kathy, who said, this is the bright side. I went for a walk on Saturday, our one sunny, warm day in some time. When I looked up to admire the sky, I realized with shock that there were no jet trails, just beautiful blue sky the way Mother Nature meant it to be. I didn't let myself think about why there were no trails. I just enjoyed it. Also, we go to Ruth, who says, when all is said and done, we will have an enormous national debt. Let us not forget that before this, the debt was already much higher because of Trump tax cuts, etc. That's an interesting point, Alan. How do you think Joe Biden and the Democrats make that distinction?
Well, let me put it this way. The Democrats have always been the ones who got blamed for the taxes. Bill Clinton comes along, works with the Republicans, and he eliminates the debt. That's right. It can be done. And, of course, now the Republican president is there. His feckless, faceless, spineless friends in the Republican Senate back him, and they say, no matter what you want, boss, you got it. We're going to give it to you. And so that's where we are. We have this huge federal debt. He doesn't give a damn. And so much for the myth that it's the Democrats who spend too much money.
We get this from Mark, who says, dear Roundtable, many Democrats continue to struggle with Biden as a viable candidate. His history of sexual allegations and as a corporate moderate are non-starters for many. Remember, Biden was selected as a moderate VP for Obama because it was feared Obama was too liberal. I've read that many are advancing that it is more important to win both the House and the Senate and stifle whomever wins, that neither Biden or Trump are good choices for president. Can you please comment that for Mark?
Libby.
I think Biden is a fine choice for president. He knows what he's doing. He served as a partner, not as, you know, the second act for Obama for 8 years. He understands government. He understands politics. He understands what needs to be done. And, you know, it's I don't see this necessarily as a choice between the lesser of two evils. I don't see Biden that way. I mean, some people are like, oh, he's not strong enough, blah, blah, blah. This is not the typical kind of campaign scenario that we're in. Nobody is going door to door. There's not a lot of focus on the campaign simply because everyone's focused on the pandemic, and rightly so. But if we want to get ourselves out of this, a person who has compassion, who understands what it means to be empathetic and a leader, Joe Biden is it.
Not only that, but here they are. They're going to make a big thing out of this sexual accusation from all those years ago, right?
I mean, give me a break.
And
give
who is going to be break. Making it? Who's going to be making it? Donald
right.
Trump. Well, it's right. just it's unreal.
Right. Who happens
well,
to
but
have
that's because
so many
Trump has
case,
those 24 liars. Yeah,
exactly.
Trump has those 24 liars accusing him of rape
right.
just for
right.
political purposes, unlike this
right.
one unreliable,
right.
but still.
Right. I mean, it's just insane.
I think as Democrats, we have to take a more strategic approach than we have previously, at least within the past 12 years. And I understand the sentiment that let's focus on the Senate and the House, but this is not a situation where we can leave money on the table. We have to try to
right.
take everything. And to attempt to say, oh, well, maybe we can make it here. No, we need to take everything. We need to take the presidency. We need to take the Senate. We need to take the House. And we need to take no prisoners as we do it. We've suffered fools for long enough. And
Amen.
This is the end of the road.
Here, here.
That's right. We need to take it all. And that's it.
Alan, we just have a few minutes. I know some more donation comments have come in. I don't know if you have them in front of you, but if you do, if you can read them, that'd be great.
That'd be great. And I will if I can just find Amber. See, Amber sent them to us. There she is, Amber Sickles. Okay, here we go. I love you, Alan, Joe, Ray, and all on the round table. I have listened every day for years. I moved to Spain last year because I did not want to live in Trump's country anymore. But I still listen to Roundtable every day online. WAMC is the best. Thank you for being a part of my life. That's WAMC.org, folks. Been a WAMC listener ever since I arrived in the area back in 1990. I learned something and I'm inspired every time I listen. The Roundtable is so incredibly valuable. Thank you to the whole cadre of panelists for your service. Another letter. Been battling lung cancer for 16 months. Hope to do more next month. Oh, come on. Don't make me weep. That makes me weep. I just realized another one. I just realized I have been listening to WAMC since moving to the area in 1995. So in addition to my recurring monthly pledge, I'm giving $25 for 25 years of outstanding programming. I wish I could give 1,000 times that, but my pocketbook is lighter these days. Love and gratitude to everyone at WAMC and from us to you, listener. I grew up with WAMC and Alan. Some of the best public radio in the land. So glad I can hear it. Central Massachusetts. And now by streaming, keep up the great work. And another one. I work at home, and this is the first thing I turn on in the morning. Your efforts do not go unnoticed. Stay safe and well. Thank you for the information and entertainment you provide during these dark times. And also, another one. Everyone out there listening needs to support WAMC. Cannot imagine this important voice ever being silenced. Step up, people. Love you for that, listener. And there you go. And those are just a few of them. And they're coming in big time now at WAMC.org. It's so easy to do it. We don't have people to answer the phones. So that's the only way we can do it. When we needed a tower and we said to you, we need $1 million. And there were people who were saying, well, you have to borrow the money. Are you kidding? I said, we're going to go and we're going to ask for it in addition to the million. And we had $2 million in a day-long drive. Come on, folks. This is the most amazing group of people who ever supported and made a public radio station. WAMC.org or 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Joe, back to you.
We have currently $199,199 in the lockbox, so perilously close to $200,000, which is amazing.
Great.
And a very nice morning, and we thank you all for all you've done and hope you will continue to do so as we round out this time. WAMC.org, as Alan mentioned, also on, you can do it by mail, WAMC, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. And you can obviously do it online as well. And we're working on getting phones up too, but we're a little ways out from that. But as of right now, this is the best way to do it, the only way to do it. So please do it that way. Let's see. Roundtable is great, says Ray. The morning discussion on the panel has become an important part of my day. It's sometimes easy to take it for granted, but I'm usually aware that we are all very lucky to have WAMC in our airwaves and make a contribution today. Also want to say I love Libby Post in a platonic way, aww, Ray says, and look forward to her contributions to the discussion. Thank you to Alan and to everyone at WAMC. We are out of time, my friends. I thank you all very, very much, and we will, of course, we'll continue with the program. We do have word that the governor will be speaking at 11:30 this morning, so we'll be going to that live at 11:30 from the Red Room at the Capitol in Albany, New York, and we'll be doing that. We have more show between now and then, and of course, we'll be back with more panel tomorrow morning. Alan, thank you very much. Also, thanks to Libby and Jim and CG Dodds, and thanks to everyone who gave this morning and will continue to do so today. $200,184 in the lockbox right now. We will be back after this short break.